Hi. Yeah, sorry about taking a bit longer.
Okay, interview with Evelyn Lau coming down in 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. Tell us who you are. Tell the people in Radioland who you are.
Tell you who I am. Oh, I don't get introduced here.
Okay, no, this is Evelyn Lau is with me on the phone. Wow. This is such an honor to be speaking to you. I'm so nervous. Well, I'm asking stupid questions already.
Are you serious? No, you're laughing at me.
No, I am. Okay. I've been a fairly big fan. I've followed.
Oh, thank
stuff.
You.
Wow. Actually, I saw you once on Front Page Challenge. That was one of the most annoying things I've ever seen in my life. When it came to the question part of the show, those dirty old assholes wouldn't ask you any questions about your book of poetry. I think it was when You Are Not Who You Claim was up for the Governor General's Award.
Actually, Oedipal Dreams, my second collection of poetry. I was really trying hard to stay on top of it all because I had been told that I was going to be on the show because of being the youngest poet to ever be nominated, you know, for the Governor General's Award. And that was the tagline and everything. But instead, it was all questions about, you know, about prostitution and about my background.
You look so mad. You looked mad. You looked like you were gonna jump over the table and strangle. Look, they were just dirty.
I was taken aback. I was completely deluged with all these questions all of a sudden, which I wasn't expecting. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, me being sort of naive and trusting, I just kind of like walked into this thing. And so I was like really trying hard not to. I don't know. I was trying to answer everything as honestly as possible, but not sort of shoot myself in the foot kind of thing at the same time. And that was, it was a really difficult situation to be in.
Yeah, we called in and made a complaint to the CBC about those guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, apparently they got like a whole bunch of letters afterwards. Well, so I felt a little better.
I hope they did. I mean, it looked like you were starting to sort of started trying to handle it as, you know, pleasantly and stuff like that. And then it just kept going. But maybe we should talk about that. You first came to attention because your book Runaway, mm-hmm. You sold the TV rights to that when you were 19. Do you regret that decision now?
I've thought about that a lot. You know, in a way, it's very hard to regret anything, right? Because when you do something, you are doing it at the time that you're doing it with the resources you have at that point in terms of, you know, what you know and what, you know, what you expect. So it's really hard to sort of say a couple of years later, well, you know, gee, I wish I hadn't done it, you know, from my vantage point of wisdom and security, you know, now at age 22 or whatever.
Yeah.
I can't really say that. I mean, in a way it's good. I mean, it's part of work. It's, you know, and of course it's flattering to have one of my books be made into a movie. You know, in all of those ways, I mean, it's positive. In a personal sense, it's really hard. I mean, I gather that they've done a very good job. You know, I've heard from a lot of people. I also had some friends who ended up working on set as various people. And everyone was, you know, basically walked away from it feeling like a really good job had been done. And that had been dealt with sensitively and with integrity and all of this. So that's not the problem. The problem is more for me just that it brings to prominence all over again a part of my life that I don't want to deal with, I guess. You know, that I don't think about myself, and I have no desire to sort of, you know, sit and wallow in any longer. I don't think I'll be watching it or anything like that.
You've probably done a million interviews where the interview just mostly talked about Runaway and that part of your life. I guess I'd sort of like to focus more. I mean, maybe I'd like to focus more on Fresh Girls, your most recent book.
Great.
Maybe we should talk a bit though about how cultural pressures affected your early life and what the reaction is now to the Chinese community to Fresh Girls and to your recent career in the poetry published.
That's very interesting. I mean, first of all, I am so out of touch with the Chinese community. You know, I'm not even entirely sure what it is per se. You know, when Runaway came out, I had a lot of young Chinese women come up to me, really glad that I had written the book, and saying that, I mean, they hadn't experienced being on the streets or anything like that, but in terms of dealing with parental pressures and trying to fit in and so forth, they really understood what I was talking about. However, you know, a number of sort of older Chinese people, parents, sort of older single Chinese men would come up to me and, you know, say you're corrupting our kids. You know, how could you have written such a thing? And I don't find that, I mean, now so much anymore, because what I'm writing is not overtly autobiographical. And I certainly have never, have really actively avoided being a spokesperson for any community, whether it is street kids or young Chinese people or whatever it is. So I think by avoiding that, I've avoided falling into certain traps. But there is still, I think now what it is, what's happening now a bit is that people sort of, because I am Chinese Canadian, they expect me to write from that voice or to write from that background and to be really a part of that community. And that's never, that's not a part of any of the stories in Fresh Girls. You know, race is not an issue in these stories. And so I find that quite bewildering, you know. There are some Chinese writers who write about their cultural backgrounds and do so very well. You know, Sky Lee in Vancouver, Amy Tan, you know, Maxine Hong Kingston in the States. But you know, but I'm not one of those people. So I find it quite strange, actually, that I would be expected to be, you know, to write about being Chinese somehow, that somehow I'm supposed to be obligated to do so.
One other thing you've avoided is getting the Generation X tag stamped on you. There's something about the writers around this generation. I've talked to Catherine Bush, they're stamping, like, she's getting tagged with this Generation X label.
Uh-huh.
And you've pretty much been able to avoid getting that.
Well, I think it's because I'm so uncool, you see. No, I mean, I was horrified when somebody, like, used the word hip about my writing, about Fresh Girls. I was, you know, my eyes, like, popped out of my head because it's sort of, like, the last thing that I am.
Why do you think you're not hip?
Well, it's so funny because, I mean, I was like, you know, the least cool kid in school, right? You know, like the total outcast, right, in high school. So the trajectory from that to being hip all of a sudden is just, it's too funny. You know, I was sort of, part of me wanted to kind of gloat about that a bit. But I mean, because I think for me, because I don't feel, you know, I'm not a part of pop culture. I mean, I've never sort of, because I haven't gone the usual route from, you know, home, school,
university,
whatever. I've missed out on a lot of the things that teenagers do, and, you know, and young people. You know, music, movies, a lot of those things. I really kind of don't know what's going on. And because my work, you know, the stories in Fresh Girls, while dealing with some issues that are, you know, are, I guess, topical now, those issues have existed, really, for, you know, for a long period of time, and probably will continue to do so. You know, prostitution, for example, and relationships between men and women, and some of the brutality that occurs. So I don't think it's particularly of the moment. So just being young, and because I guess I don't. I mean, Doug Copeland, his work draws on a lot of sort of current references and things, and my work doesn't at all. And I think, you know, is kind of outside of time and outside of place.
Yeah, okay, I agree.
Oh, thank you.
One of your stories I heard at the reading you did at UBC recently is being anthologized in a book of erotic stories by women.
Uh-huh.
Which story is being included? And you said you feel very strongly that you didn't find the story, or you don't find the stories to be particularly erotic.
No. And a part of me was sort of horrified that other people did. It's a story called Mercy. And, I mean, to me, what I was conveying in the story, I mean, while it is about a sexual encounter, and quite a charged sexual encounter, the level of sort of pain and self-hate and hatred of the other person, you know, towards the end of the story that comes up, is, you know, is to me so extreme that is not, I don't know, I mean, I certainly don't find that erotic, you know, that level of shame and disgust with, you know, with oneself, and the, sort of the loss of self that occurs. I would think, you know, desire and erotica should be, you know, should hopefully be the exact opposite of that. You know, should be more celebratory of sex. And my stories aren't, you know. So, but I think we're at sort of a stage now, or I guess the way that I've rationalized that is that, you know, more women now are writing erotica, or what they call erotica, because it's been traditionally sort of a male territory, pornography and all of that. So I guess it's a way of claiming some of that territory for themselves. But in that initial surge of interest in this territory, or this initial claiming of that territory, they may be trying to include people who write about sex and think of it as being erotic. But certainly, I mean, to me, there's a huge difference between, or there can be an enormous difference between writing about sex and writing erotica. An enormous gulf. Because sex can be such, you know, can be such a brutal thing, you know, such a hurtful thing. It isn't always great.
Yeah, the sex is almost sort of, I don't want to say it's almost incidental, but it sort of is to the reality of the characters' lives. The sex just is sort of part of it. I mean, is it sort of a substitute for some of these people? What does sex mean, you think, to these characters in your stories?
It's a way out of loneliness. It's a way to express anger, a way to hurt another person. You know, sex is, in these stories anyway, it can do a lot of damage. I mean, you know, not so much physically, but, although some of the stories get into that as well, but, you know, sort of the emotional kind of cruelty that can go along with it. It can be very hurtful. But some way, I suppose, for some of these people, in these stories, who have rather unorthodox sort of sexual inclinations that they are ashamed of, and that they feel that society would not accept them, that their wives or their families would be horrified if they knew what their fantasies were, that they feel the need, because they are suppressing it, it sort of gets bigger and bigger inside them, and they feel the need to to take it out. But when they do, they feel so much shame about that afterwards, that it becomes a sort of destructive, cyclical behavior.
I kind of thought, or I thought, that the most romantic couple, I don't know if you would say this, was the homosexual male couple in Fetish Night.
Oh, really?
I don't know, they walked off together arm in arm, and you saw them together afterwards. I mean, but would you agree with that, or is there any romanticism?
That's interesting. It is. That's interesting, because I think maybe you say that because there's a level of
there's a connection, kind of.
Yeah, and a kind of like unequal footing type thing with those two people. Whereas with a lot of the other people, it's one person always has the higher footing, and that may shift, during the relationship and in the course of the story. You know, who has the higher footing changes. But there is never that equality. So maybe, that's interesting. I think some of the romanticism in the other stories, some of it exists in the sense that a lot of these younger women fantasize about having regular relationships, whatever that might mean, you know, whether it's being married or having a boyfriend, or what their sort of romantic notion of how the rest of the world lives.
You mentioned Story of O and Lolita and other books in your in Fresh Girls, and your book covers some of the same topics as O and Lolita, but without the romanticism and exoticism of O, and sort of the lightness that Lolita. What did you really think of these other books?
These are good questions. I'm so happy you're asking me these questions that other people haven't asked before. I really am. This is great. I'm looking at them right now. They're on my bookshelf. Story of O, I actually quite liked. I actually found it in an airport bookstore and getting on the plane, and
funny,
there it was.
It's not allowed in Canada anymore if you've been following the latest laws and stuff like that.
I keep seeing things in the Globe and Mail about like the customs seizures and so forth.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Really? I mean, I heard that they did a movie out of it. I can't imagine how they could have done so.
Yeah, it's. I heard that it's got. I haven't seen it either. I just heard about it. It's the same girl from that the Manual video series is in that.
No, I don't know that. Yeah. But I think that was in the 70s or something. I felt it was actually quite well written. Of course, it's intriguing in the sense that there's this whole mystery as to whether it was a man or a woman who wrote the book and who he or she was, whether you know whether he or she was a famous writer or not or whatever, or you know what level of truth or factual truth there was. I found it well done. I didn't find it pornographic in the sense that there was enough kind of fairly good writing and enough of a sense of scene. In fact, quite a rich sense of place and scene, which you don't find in, you know, in conventional pornography. So I quite liked it. Lolita, I think, is a brilliant book. I've read a couple of other of Nabokov. How do you pronounce his name? Nabokov?
I've been saying it Nabokov. I don't know. Yeah, I get that from that Police song about Don't Stand So Close to Me, where he says that book by Nabokov. So that's where I got the pronunciation from. Whether that's correct or incorrect, I have no idea. That's just Sting's pronunciation.
Yeah, right. Great. Yeah, real authority on literature here. No, brilliant book. I mean, I want to read it again. I think it's one of those books. Martin Amis, about a year ago, did a sort of an appreciation of Lolita in, I think it was the New Yorker or something. And he was saying how, you know, I mean, this is a book he just keeps going back to. And I mean, the margins are full of notes and things. And, yeah, it's quite amazing. I can't, I read actually Dorothy Parker's review of Lolita when it first came out. And apparently, like, a lot of people were shocked by it and wanted to ban it and stuff. Yeah. And she was just saying, I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, this is a very well-done book. So, yeah, that's a good book.
Do you think that the way you included those books, though, I mean, did you get across, I'm not sure that you got across the fact that you liked those books. You sort of sounded like, where it was noted, it sort of sounded like you were sort of commenting, yeah, they're just books.
Ah, but now you're confusing me and the character.
Oh, yeah, okay, true, fair, yeah, fair. A fair comeback.
Yeah, the character actually thought, you know, these books were gifts from a psychiatrist, sort of lover that she had, and yeah, I mean, she found it as, I mean, it was within the context of the story. It was his way of hinting at what he really wanted from her and what he really thought of her.
Yeah. I didn't get that. Oh, I should have. I'm so stupid.
No, it's good. Now you do.
Okay, yeah, thanks. we talked about that, the thing that happened on Front Page Challenge, and is that fairly typical of the treatment that you receive? And what's it going to take to get people to start treating you like a good writer or like a writer? I mean, do you think Fresh Girls is going to do it? Or?
Well, I mean, after I went on tour with Fresh Girls, I was really impressed with how I was received by the literary interviewers, i.e. people who were books pages editors or, you know, literary columnists and so forth and book reviewers. They uniformly liked the writing, and that made a huge difference in terms of how I was treated. Had they not liked the writing, had they thought it was, you know, simply a sensational subject matter which I was milking for attention, then I would have gone through hell. You know, I would have basically had to explain myself, and for good reason. But it was, I mean, it was a huge relief, and I was really sort of amazed at how many of the questions were about my work and had sort of an element of respect which I had never encountered before in you know, in terms of Runaway or anything else. However, I still had a number of interviews which were really difficult and invasive from people who saw me as being, you know, sort of from people who hadn't read the book. You know, but had read material about the book and had knew about my background, and all of their questions were very personal and also political in a strange way. Like things like I'd get on a talk show, and one of the first things that they would ask me would be, "Well, what do you think of the legalization of prostitution?" Your mouth would hang open. And I mean, I remember I encountered that with Runaway. There was like I did the launch for Runaway, and there was this woman who asked me what I thought about legalization prostitution, and I said I didn't know, you know, that it wasn't an issue I'd thought about really well, and I really didn't know. And she kept asking me that question. She got really incensed because she thought I had an opinion which I was not sharing with her. But, you know, I really didn't, and in fact still don't. And I've thought about it now quite a bit simply because I've been forced to, but I still haven't come to any conclusive kind of thing. And so I find it really hard that people, you know, still kind of in a way want to see me, some people anyway, want to see me as being a spokesperson or as being sort of an expert on something. And, you know, in many ways, I think part of the reason I am so often not really happy with Runaway having been published is that I still have to deal with so much of this stuff that I wouldn't have to even if I was writing the sort of material I am now, but just had not given a book that was so directly autobiographical. I wouldn't be having to deal with or having to account for so many things, which are purely, you know, which are personal, which I really don't owe anybody. You know, I don't have to sort of answer things like this. But of course, you're in a sort of position where you kind of say, well, you know, I did publish a book, so I do sort of have to open up my life all over again, which is really hard, right? Because, you know, it's very exhausting. And then sometimes you go home and, like, you know, or I go home and I'm like so pissed off and so like sort of drained. And I think, and I really have to reorient myself and, I'll say, well, the important thing is the writing. You know, all of this other stuff, I mean, nobody's going to care about, you know, 50 years from now or whatever. I mean, it's totally irrelevant. But hopefully 50 or 100 years from now, my work will be out there still, and that's what's important. So I have to kind of, you know, clear my head of a lot of this stuff. But that's hard. You know, I sort of resent that. I think sometimes in a way it comes between me being able to concentrate on my writing as much as I should be. Really.
Concerned about how the book would be received, sort of, was a problem. Did it affect how you're writing? I mean, did this sort of come up after the, or I guess it would, was it a concern when you were writing Fresh Girls, how the book would be received?
Yes. Oh, it was very much. It was a really big risk for me, because the two poetry books had been received, you know, very well, critically, but this was my first prose book in, 4 years, you know, and since Runaway, and I knew it would get a fair bit of attention because the poetry, I mean, poetry doesn't. And I didn't know if it was any good or not. I mean, I didn't know if I could write prose. I'm really not very secure about my prose writing abilities. Yeah. Oh, God, no, I'm a much better poet than I am a prose writer.
Do you consider yourself a poet first and, like, a prose
writer? Well, I mean, see, I hate calling myself a poet because it's so sort of marginal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, who's going to read me if I call myself a poet, right? So I try not to. But I am more comfortable writing poetry, and things come to me in a poetic context. Not necessarily easier, but simply more naturally. And I've been trying to sort of, I have to sort of wean myself into writing more prose. I have to, like, really sort of try and focus on the prose, because I want the audience, obviously, you know, that prose has.
There's an element of poetry, I think, though, in your prose. I mean, you'd be reading along. I mean, was it different for you writing prose and poetry? What I'm trying to say is, well, you go along in the book, and there'll be some great poet metaphors, like the ring hung loose on his finger, and or the ring was as hard as a weapon. I like that one. The city gathered there and pooled beneath the balcony. I can't remember what story that's in. I think it's in the apartment.
Yeah.
Did you approach writing prose much the same as you did poetry, or was it a completely different process?
Well, see, all of the stories in Fresh Girls, or many of them, were initially even shorter than they are now.
Really?
Yeah. and that was, like, a real problem, because we were trying to sell this in the States. I mean, HarperCollins took it right away here in Canada, but we were trying to sell in the States, and it was getting rejected right and left, because editors were sending back letters saying, well, you know, we really like, you know, we think she writes well, and it's very interesting, and et cetera, but you know, it's too poetic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's, but Jane Ann Phillips, her early stories, you know, she's an American writer, sometimes were only a paragraph long, and it was because, you know, she started off as a poet, and that was how basically she saw things. I had to sort of really work at stretching these stories out, because I was so used to, as a poet, I've trained myself so much to condense things, you know, to find a few perfect lines and a few perfect phrases, and that would be it, kind of thing. You know, I would often, when I write a poem, it would be like 10 times the first draft would be 10 times as long as the final draft. And that's what I'm used to doing, is, you know, is tearing everything down until I feel I have sort of the essence of what I'm trying to express. And you can't really do that in a story. I mean, you can to some degree, I mean, in the sense that you want to be as precise as possible, but you can't really pare it down so much that you lose, you know, that you lose any kind of plot or movement or dialogue or whatever. So I've really struggled with that. It doesn't come naturally to me.
I'm so surprised that you had to make the stories longer that they asked you to do that. But the stories, I thought, were really a real slice of life, almost in some cases like a snapshot.
That's what they are. See, but I think a lot of people aren't happy with it. I mean, it's gotten very good reviews, which is great. It's really reassuring. But, you know, it's so different from what the traditional short story is. It's so different from a Mavis Gallant or a Alice Munro sort of short story. And I think a lot of people are more comfortable with that sort of mainstream story structure. But, you know, I don't write that way. And I don't know, I mean, sometimes now I try to write that way, and it's really... You know, I don't know what I should do. Like, follow my true path, or, you know, follow sort of, try to get on the bestseller list. I don't know.
Keep writing stuff like Fresh Girls.
Just, yeah, you think?
Oh, it was great. But how did it come together? I mean, do you consider it a complete work, or is it a collection? I mean, how did Fresh Girls come together?
Well, it feels pretty much like one thing, right? Like, the stories all seem to work together. They came together from a period of, most of them, almost all of them, were written over a period of 2 years. But over a five-year period, I was working on short stories off and on while I was writing poetry. So while the two poetry books came out, I was also working on stories. And I wrote, actually, 50 stories in this five-year period. About 30 of them were the worst possible things you could have ever seen. Nobody can write as bad as those, as I did in those 30 stories. But I was really, initially, I think it was more than just the writing. I mean, the writing, I guess, was okay, but it was overcoming this immense sort of autobiographical and confessional sort of way of writing that I really started off from, you know, because I used to write diaries and all of that. And it was really, and also, I mean, because I was a teenager, I was really self-absorbed writing about me, you know. So I had to kind of, like, get beyond that. And so I eventually sent my agent... About 18 stories, and she sent those off to HarperCollins, and we worked on all of those together, and decided to sort of pare it down to 10, which I was fine with. I was a bit nervous about how slim the book was, but I think sort of now in retrospect, the 10 stories work really well together, and that any more would either be perhaps repetitive or kind of overkill, because it is sort of the same topic and there's different facets of the same topic, right?
Yeah, the characters sort of have a similar kind of, I don't know how to say it, sad kind of emptiness. What drew you to write about these kind of characters?
Well, this has been interesting, because on the tour, I think some people were, like, really mad at me because they expected me to be my characters. They expected me to be sad and empty. Here they got this, like, person bouncing into their studio, right? And they're, like, really mad because they feel cheated.
I think you walk in wearing all black with black stuff on your eyes.
Oh, yeah, and you know, just really fragile and morose. And I am sometimes very morose, but not in public, anyway. Well, I guess, you know, I mean, a lot of those feelings that these women feel are ones that I have really felt, in my own life. In terms of what I've done with, you know, with prostitution and with never being in a relationship, you know, per se, or just having taken this really different route through life and feeling kind of outside of things and feeling, basically sort of the sex without any sort of intimacy or anything like that, right? So, a lot of those feelings are there and are fairly sort of powerful in me. But in terms of the situations, a lot of those are just very fictional. So it was a way for me to sort of bring out the stories. Some of the stories were a way for me to bring out some really strong feelings I had in contexts that were not part of my own experience. And I found that really interesting. You know, it's kind of to take the truth of the emotion and put it into situations that are untrue, and still make the situations as precise and as closely observed as I could, and as imagined, as well imagined as I could make them.
I don't know if people are calling this a very depressing book, but was it depressing for you to write about these people?
I'm not sure if depressing is the right word. Because when I think of depression, I think of sort of being kind of slumped in the corner, and sort of this as a kind of very sort of even emotion. And I think the emotions in the stories are more extreme rather than just kind of flat, like depression is.
It's hard. I don't know how. I guess I'm moving right along. I don't know how to ask the question different, but depressing, you're right. I don't think it would be. I mean, maybe it's not the right word for.
Men have said that they have found the stories depressing. I think in the sense that, you know, sex is presented so joylessly, perhaps, and with so much pain. I guess it's perhaps it's the pain that is more what I was trying to convey.
The pain of the characters, I think, comes through very clear. I mean, was it to get that down on paper? It's incredibly written. I mean, I love the writing in the book, and I love the way the characters are created. But was it an emotional drain on you to do that, or was it sort of just part of the whole writing process, just the same as anything else?
Writing is so much work for me that I don't really. It's both. I mean, it's both emotionally draining and it's also very sort of energizing at the same time. Because when my writing is going well and I feel happy with the story I've written and happy with my revisions, then I feel this surge of energy, really, no matter what I'm writing about. So even though in the middle of the writing it is really hard, and not just for the subject matter, I mean, the act of writing I find very hard. Unfortunately, it'd be great if I didn't, but I do. So after something is finished, no matter how bleak or painful the story might be, I mean, I'm just so delighted to have it over with that that doesn't really factor into it.
Okay, Miss Law, could you hold on for just one sec?
Sure.
I have to change my tape. I ran out of tape.
Oh, okay.
Just one sec. Sure. Just take me 2 seconds.
Okay.